March is Women's History Month, and a pioneer of the women's movement will be in town here on Friday. I already kind of spilled the beans here on who we're going to be talking about, but Melissa Van Mark, remind our listeners about Holly Near.
Well, Holly Near has been combining music and activism since the 1960s. She'll be at the 10 Pound Fiddle this Friday night. And I have to say that talking to her on the phone, she was one of the most thoughtful and kind-sounding people I think I've ever talked to before. And I've talked to a great deal of thoughtful and kind people. She's noted for her anti-war and pro-feminist activism. But when I talked to her earlier this week, we actually had to start out with a very much lesser-known Holly Near fact. She actually got her start in television in the 1970s.
In my first year at UCLA, I was seen by agents who tend to come over and watch the new crop of actors that are coming up from USC and UCLA and the surrounding colleges, and I got a job in a film. So I left school, which I would not necessarily advise to any young people who are listening to this program, to go and do this film. And then it just sort of began to spin. I did quite a few films, several television shows, including The Partridge Family and All in the Family, Room 222, later on L.A. Law. And then I did films, and I went to New York and did a stint on Broadway in the musical Hair. So that was kind of between the time I was 18, 19, 20, and then I began singing in clubs around Los Angeles, and I got an incredible opportunity to go on an anti-war tour. We were resisting the war that was being waged against Indochina, and I got to be a singer in this tour, an actor and dancer, and that really got me interested in the ways in which music, art, culture can have a voice in the world. And I was very drawn into this world of social consciousness and art and music. So it took me away from Hollywood.
You don't sound too unhappy about that, though.
Well, every once in a while when I watch the Academy Awards, I get a little twinge of, oh, gee, what would have happened if I had stayed and really trained as an actor? Because they all look like they're having lots of fun. And there are things one can do with fame and fortune. Certainly, look at Matt Damon and various actors who have taken their immense wealth and put it to good work. So every once in a while, I think, I wonder how it would have gone if I made a different choice. But I have had an amazing life, not one that I could even have imagined when I was a child. And so it's curiosity to look at the other choices, but not with regret.
You're very strongly identified with social justice music, and so many sources will say, you know, you're one of the mothers of women's music. How do you feel about those labels?
Oh, I'm honored to be labeled. You know, that people actually know enough about my work to have a name is extraordinary as an artist to be identified with ideas. And so I feel very honored about that. It's always been a challenge for me as an artist to try to figure out how to do songs that are about something without them being rhetorical or boring, because we've all listened to a boring political song, and it can be deadly. And I got better at it. When I first started out, I was much more rhetorical. And I think now that mixture of sensibility and experience and poetry and humor and entertainment has all really come together in a way that I feel very good about. And I love that there are people in the peace movement or the women's movement or the gay and lesbian movement that really identify me as a voice that has been of use to them. And that's I love that.
I saw at least one recording at the Michigan Women's Festival. How many times have you been here? Do you know?
Oh, I think I've gone. I was at the first one.
No kidding.
30. So I don't know, how many years has it been going on? Since 75
something,
or something?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
I went
like
to
that.
The first, second, and probably more regularly at the beginning. And then at least every 3 to 5 years, I'll go. And, of course, I've been to Ann Arbor many times over at the Arc. And I'm really happy to be coming to the 10 Pound Fiddle to come help you all welcome in spring.
We cannot promise that the weather will act accordingly, because this is...
I know, but we can call.
We can call.
I would love for everybody to come and hang out and be part of the event. It's hard to talk about one's own music without sounding like you're, you know, blowing your own horn. But the fact of the matter is that people have such a good time. They enjoy seeing each other. There's a lot of singing along as well as some very artistic moments that the audience goes very silent for, and it's beautiful. And I love the audience, and I think they have a very good time. It's such a mix of musical theater, sort of cabaret style to folk music.
You've put out around 30 albums, first starting around 1973, and the most recent is from 2012. Do you feel some album pressure at all that got to put out another one? Or at this point, do you kind of get to do, you know, what you want and not have to tour in support of an album?
Well, it's a lovely question. If I were with a, quote, record company, I would have to put out records on a regular basis and tour to support the record. A record company can't survive without that. And I find it very exhausting. I mean, even though I have my own label and I do my own material, there is that pressure to get the record paid for after you put all your money into it. So I have a self-pressure to do that. I'm concerned about the environment. So I've cut back quite a bit.
Carbon footprint reasons, basically?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just I'm trying to make sure that our touring is regional, that I don't, like, get on a plane and fly, you know, 500 miles this way and 1,000
right.
miles that way, and that we try to keep it as simple as possible. And but it's concerning to me. And the other part is that it's still really important for us to come together and be a live community. To not have everything be digital, because I could be doing these concerts on the web. And it's not quite the same, as you know.
Well, and I always end up at some point bringing this up in interviews with musicians that so much of the listening that we do that's important to us, that forms our musical likes and dislikes and our musical inner map, is done with other people or has been traditionally. And I worry that earbuds are making that go away.
Yeah, well, my grandmother probably worried when we moved from the horse and buggy to airplane, so I think there's always concern when we let go of one kind of way of lifestyle to go to another. And I have crossed over into being an elder, and I just don't know what is right for young people now. They're going to have to make those decisions for themselves. And I do worry. But I do think there's something about passing on the torch and trusting that they have the intelligence, the sensitivities, the well-being to figure out what they are going to need for their lives and their children. And I feel like elders who are around and ready to answer questions and be supportive is an important thing, but we're not really in charge anymore, or we shouldn't be.
Which is both terrifying and refreshing.
Yeah, that letting go. It's like parents just letting your children leave the nest and trust that you've done the best you can to give them the tools that they need to make decisions. To me, that was the best thing my parents ever did, was not tell us how to think about a subject, but how to think. It just, how do you take in information and process and say, well, it could go this way or it could go that way, and what's the consequences of the decision? But ultimately, if all you do is pound into a child what they should think, then when they leave home, they haven't learned how to think for themselves. So I feel very grateful to my parents for having given us a lot of room to learn to think. And I made a lot of mistakes, but I also learned how to evaluate my mistakes and get back up and try to do it differently or better next time.
That's interesting you mentioned mistakes, because one of the questions I had wanted to sort of throw out there, a while back I had talked to Janice Ian about being a young musician during the 60s, and she said she felt like really she had been sheltered from a lot of the parts of that era that were more destructive, like the drugs. And you know, that era tends to get glamorized somewhat, but there were a lot of casualties too. And so, as you said, you know, you've crossed into being an elder. How do you look back at that period of time and say, you know, how you made it through that time of upheaval?
Well, I had an angel on my shoulder when it came to drugs, because I was surrounded by them. I tried some of them, and they either made me paranoid, sleepy, or cost too much money, or they cut notes off the top of my range, and my ego was too big to let go of my voice. So I feel like I don't know how that happened, but I just say, thank whatever that got me through that without falling prey to, because I have an addict personality, and there's addiction in my family, but I made it through that pretty unscarred. And I did see a lot of casualties, and it breaks my heart. I just don't think there's any reason for our culture to support drugs except for people who are in extreme pain and need the assistance of drugs. But as a social thing, I don't know. I don't see the point. I saw so many people die as a result of it. But the mistakes that I made, I'm not sure I could have avoided making them, but I came up at a time where the women's movement and the lesbian movement were trying to re-identify the role of women in contemporary society. And in many ways, we had to lay the bricks down before we stepped on them. Obviously, there had been women who have come before us, but in this contemporary sort of re-blossoming of the women's movement and the development of feminism, we didn't know what we were doing. And we just jumped in with incredible bravery. But oftentimes, we took a lot of people down with us as we went through down that path and made mistakes, hurt people. It was oftentimes a battleground. And if I were going to do it again, I would do it with a great deal more sensitivity and understanding and compassion than I did at the time. But I think when we do scary things, sometimes we have to go in it like bulldozers, and we mowed down some flowers along the way, and I wish that hadn't happened. But as a result, a lot of people, I don't remember that book called Bridge Calling My Back that women of color wrote, but incredible book, talking about how you get from one place to another, and sadly sometimes it's on the shoulders of someone else. So a lot of people walked over us and the path that we created to get to where the opportunities that women have today. And one can either look at that and go, ouch, why did you do that? Or you can say, that's great. Somebody had to build this road. And my generation of women really did. So am I sorry we built the road? No. Do I wish we'd done it with more grace? Yes.
That's interesting, because I did want to ask you about that, because much of your activism and your music has been connected to LGBT issues. The last few years have been such a time of activity around issues like same-sex marriage and same-sex adoption. And you've been through civil rights movements before, several of them. What are the themes that you see repeating? What are the universals in these movements of people to be recognized?
Well, there is a common need of all human beings to be able to get up in the morning and live their lives without someone else's foot on their neck. And I don't think there's been any time in humanity where that didn't exist. But as time has gone on, we've become more skilled or aware that there can actually be social change movements that make change. I think probably back in the 13th century, maybe people didn't know that change was possible in the way we know it now. But the civil rights movement that came out of the African American community, the labor movement, the farm workers movement, these various social change movements have educated us on how to proceed. So there are still so many people who are struggling and suffering. They have some examples of how to go forward. So that may be different than from hundreds of years ago. I don't know. I think there's a balance between trying to really go for getting one's own issue put on the agenda and realizing that none of us have a single issue. So how do we make what might seem a single issue into a global issue? Because I don't think any group can do it by themselves. So within the gay and lesbian transgender community, there are also poor and working class people and people of color. So how can you have a movement about, for example, equality in marriage without also dealing with issues of class and race and internationalism and borders and immigration? And we don't function separate from one another. And So there's where the sophistication, to me, is oftentimes ignored. It's not where movements don't understand. They can't be single issue because none of us live in that kind of isolation or shouldn't. Even the peace movement has to understand that one has to talk to soldiers and returning vets. You can't isolate from that reality.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Well, I love talking to you. Thank you for calling. And I love that you're keeping radio alive. Radio is such a phenomenal thing. I hope it does not diminish because it's, you know, I drive along in my tour, I turn on the radio, and there is some little moment going on. And it's just so exciting, you know, and you make that happen. So,
oh, thank you.
I was doing a radio show somewhere in the middle of the night down in, I think it was North Carolina or something, and this truck driver called in, and he was on a night shift, and he said, wow, this was before cell phones, but I had to pull over to a payphone and call. I've never heard anything about the things you're talking about, and I find it very interesting. Out there in the middle of the night, you know, communicating with a truck driver to the degree that he had to pull off the road. It made me so happy.
Holly Neer, thank you so much for joining us.
Take care.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.